Hello, folks. It's Archery, and thank you for tuning in to Why We Do the Work. I hope you are all well and ready to hear this next episode. From the top, I'd like to thank Beyond Toxics for sponsoring this podcast. And if you have a chance, hop over to beyondtoxics.org. You'll find the rest of the team there and get to catch up on all the happenings in our organization. Thank you, of course, to the producer and the magic maker of this show, Crystal. Thank you, Crystal. So let's get started. Today, I have the opportunity to chat with a hero without a cape, Miss Kelly Ferguson, science and math instructor of Kalapuya High School, which is in Eugene, Oregon, and a student from Kalapuya High School, Natsley. Thank you so much, ladies, for being here with me today.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you, Audrey.
So let's get acquainted. Firstly, Kalapuya High School is in the Bethel School District, which is in West Eugene. And you all know about West Eugene because we talk about it a lot on this podcast. And so I'm super excited to chat with these two ladies here today. Because as I said many times, change starts with the youth. That's who will be here when we're gone. They are the world, and we as adults are stewards until they're ready to rule. So I'm jazzed to talk to Metzley. This is her turn, the given opportunity to raise awareness about how living in West Eugene impacts you and your schoolmates. So I'm super, super excited to talk to you, Metzley. I know that I came to your class before, and I don't remember seeing you there because I was emotional, because I was finally getting to do exactly what it is that I set out to do, and that's to talk to kids about living near pollution and how it can impact your life and what it can do to you and your family's livelihoods. So standing in front of your class and talking about J.H. Baxter with kids who went to school with my daughter was very, very special to me. So thank you for inviting me to your class. I'm going to try not to cry on this episode because this is really, it's real special to me that you're here. So thank you.
Don't be afraid to cry, though.
I cry a lot. I do. So Bethel School District, you all, is the third largest school district in Lane County. And it was originated in 1948. I had to look all this up because I didn't know. Did you know it was originated in 1948? So it originated in 1948. And the Bethel School District is where Willamette High School is. And Willamette High School is where my kids went to high school. And there was a whole bunch of different numbers for how many kids are in the Bethel School District. But the one that I landed on was 5,500, give or take, are in the Bethel School District. And Kalapuya High School, as I said, is in West Eugene. It's in the Bethel School District. And it opened in 2002. And it serves grades 10 through 12, right?
That's correct. 10 through 12. We just don't take freshmen. We ask that they give the main Willamette High School a try their freshman year.
Okay. And so let's talk a little bit about Kalapuya High School. When I went there with a couple of my teammates, I was really impressed by how you guys are in this open concept class. Like, it's a huge, everybody's in one class, but you have your separate classes. And when I was in sixth grade was elementary school still. When I was in sixth grade, it was in elementary school. And honestly, I think it should still be in elementary school. I don't think sixth graders and eighth graders need to be in the same. That's just me. I think it needs to be in elementary. But I went to an elementary that was called Taylor Elementary, and it was in an open concept like that. It had everybody. It was like cubicles for classrooms is what was going on there. And I was always so impressed with how we were able to stay focused in a room with a bunch of other kids. So what's that like? What's that like being in a room with all of your schoolmates and all of your colleagues all at once?
Well, yeah. So it is like a very large one-room schoolhouse. Our classrooms do exist in little nooks of that one-room schoolhouse. And I have the pleasure of knowing one of the people who started Kalapuya High School. Mm-hmm. And what she had said was, as the principal or as someone who worked there, she could be in the center of the room and feel the tension and go where that tension was. Mm-hmm. And that if things needed to be worked out with students, it kind of happened all in front of each other. And that was really intentional, that, you know, someone just doesn't disappear from our classroom and then, oh, what happened? And mm-hmm. but we like get to see us work through our struggles together, and in a supportive way, we can foster that. And for me as a teacher, when I first came to Kalapuya to interview, what really struck me is all the teachers, including our principal, everyone, we're all in this one big open space. And it's not like the principal has their own room off over here that feels like higher or more powerful than everyone else.
Mm-hmm. Elite. But
yes, he and all of us are all on the same level. We're all just very approachable and accessible. And I really like that kind of disrupting that hierarchical nature that school can feel. It makes us all more personable. So yeah, and I'd love to hear Metzli's take too. Yes, it can be a little distracting sometimes with noise, and especially me as a science teacher, I'm always like burning things and we're like tinkering and clanking things in the corner, and I'm always the teacher apologizing like, I'm sorry I smoked us out again, or we have to work out those things. But
yeah. As a student, I remember the first day that I came to Kalapuya for my intake, I walked in and I was like, oh my gosh, like this is very different from any other type of school that I've ever been to. And immediately that made me feel like I was going to have a better chance of thriving here than at any of the other schools that I have, because the way that the school is laid out makes it so, like Kelly said, it's like the principal or like a teacher can be in one room and then they can hear the tension or feel the tension that's happening in another room, and they can go there and then act on that and act with those students, and then all of the other students in the school see that, and then they're like, okay, like we're all working through this together, we are a community. And I think that for me, my favorite part about Kalapuya is the open concept and how we are such like a tight-knit community, and though there are like things that we go through, it's still like we work it out in the ways that we can, and it's just very tight-knit.
I love that. I liked it too. I thought it was, even though I'm a little bit nosy, obviously, yeah, I have a podcast, so I'm nosy. So I was a little distracted, you know, what was going on in other people's classes. I wanted to know, but I really did like being in that because everybody was together. You know, it was all, and we didn't, it was all sixth graders. Like I was in a big, big school. I grew up in Texas, so you can imagine Texas, everything's big. Schools are big, everything's big. So, and you guys, is Kalapuya a extension of Willamette High School? Kelly, you said you know the person who started it. Why did it start? What's up?
Yeah, well, Kalapuya was always intended to be its own standalone high school. Though we do mainly serve the students who aren't making it for whatever reason at Willamette. So in the beginning, the people who created Kalapuya High School were trying to recover the most at-risk youth from dropping out entirely. And all the research said that we're just not as effective at doing that in-house, like in Willamette. And these students really need to have ownership in the physical space in order for them to be invested in their education. It just really had to feel like theirs. So I think their vision was very clear. It needed to be its own building separate from Willamette mm-hmm. in order to have the success and to address the dropout rates that they were seeing at the time. So yeah, it became an alternate education standalone high school where students can still earn their diploma. They just get a bunch of extra support and hands-on learning to do so. And I think that the small class sizes really help with that as well. And since opening, it has been very successful in doing that.
That's really, really great, because I struggled as a youth in high school. And a lot of that is, you know, I have dyslexia and some other things going on that made it difficult for me. And there wasn't, when I was in high school, there weren't charter schools like that. There wasn't access to have support. You know, like I didn't have the best support coming from home. So I really needed to have that at school. And if I had had an opportunity to be in a school like Kalapuya, I think I would have been able to thrive a little bit more. I made it through. I did okay, but I could have done better if I had an opportunity like you have, Nestle. I could have been better educated as in high school.
Yeah.
How many students are at Kalapuya? How many kids go there?
About 100, give or take.
But it's not huge.
Yeah. And I think, you know, speaking to what you were just talking about, Audrey, I think another big thing is at Kalapuya, they don't have homework. And another big, you know, research thing is that homework is just inequitable. The students who have support at home are the ones who do well with their homework. So I think that that piece is really big. And I think for parents and their students, if you think about it, you know, you get home and you're fighting with your kid to get homework done. And I think it changes the conversation at home to like, we don't have to think about homework. How can we connect in another way and in a more positive way? And I really think that it's just better for home life all around and specifically for working class families.
Yeah. I mean, I'm imagining how some of the kids had to, how their education was impacted by COVID because, you know, suddenly everybody was online and I'm not a teacher, you know, so I was like, it took me a long time to get comfortable with that. And luckily, you know, my girls were okay, but there's a lot of kids who, you know, they didn't thrive during that time. And I don't think I would have myself either. So I'm glad that there's Kalapuya. It's a necessary stage and place for kids that want to do better and have dreams to do better and just need a little bit more support. So
absolutely.
Do you know why Bethel is its own school district? Like, what is the reason? Because to me, that is separating West Eugene from the rest of Eugene, which is the whole conversation that we're having all the time about West Eugene, is that it's separated. So much so that the kids are in their own school district. And it's weird to me. I never could understand why it's like that.
Well, I'm pretty sure that Bethel School District was a consolidation of a bunch of rural school districts like Irving, Clear Lake, like a lot of them. I think as many as 12 different school districts. And it's because it was really rural out here. But, you know, also knowing a bit of history about Eugene, and this is the area where the Black community was forcibly moved to. So segregation is also an underpinning in how the districts were formed, I'm sure, historically. And we're just the inheritance of that. So that, and just people who lived rurally out here, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't know why it's separate from 4J. In some sense, like, I have my perspective now. I'm glad that we're not one big district. I feel like that would be a lot of schools to manage. And where here at Bethel, we have the freedom to make decisions independently from 4J. I really love working for Bethel School District. I don't know why we're separate from 4J. There's that historical side of things, but I do feel like a bigger issue is the city's oversight and allocation of funds to community centers here in West Eugene. So we have inherited a neighborhood that is really just very not easy to get around. Students have like barger to walk down, and there's a bunch of retirement and other communities that are gated off and really prevent you from moving with ease here unless you have a car. And so there's also very few community centers here. So we have Pearson Barn, we have our Bethel Farm that exists here at Kalapuya High School, which is this amazing community hub. But really, the youth here don't have much else. And I do feel like that city planning part really needs to just be stepped up over here. Mm-hmm. When I'm asking students, you know, what is your community? How do you connect with community? Students often have a really hard time identifying that. And I do feel that it is a result of just West Eugene kind of being put on the back burner as far as city planning. I mean, we know this from a bunch of industrial operations being put in place right next to homes, right? Yeah. That's another example of how West Eugene has not been served well. So that, in my view, is a very big issue.
Yeah. Thank you for saying all that, Kelly, because, you know, my kids were going around in West Eugene not having a car and not, you know, the bike paths are not safe. You know, there's all sorts of paraphernalia there, and there's a lot of unhoused people that could be dangerous. Not all unhoused people are dangerous, but it's dangerous for kids to be walking around on the bike path like that. So to have a youth center that's for kids would be phenomenal out there. So anyway, thanks for saying all that, because I think it's important and it shows how much you care as a teacher. So Kelly, you were involved in the Northwest Teaching for Social Justice Conference in 2022. Can you tell me about that and how that made it so that we met? How did Beyond Toxics and you connect during that?
Well, myself and Lisa Arkin, Sarah Stapleton, and Katie Jacobson from the U of O Department of Education put together a conference workshop to try to get our environmental justice curriculum centered around the problem of industrial pollutants in West Eugene out there so other Oregonian schools and teachers would have access to it. So we were offering it as an open curriculum for them to use. Mm-hmm. But really, all of us were connected much earlier than that, actually, much earlier than the conference. I was just very fortunate to have been in the right place at the right time. Sarah Stapleton was my science methods teacher during my Master's of Education program at the U of O. Oh. Yeah, and she and I were also connected by some outdoor education research that another colleague in the Environmental Leadership Department was doing. So Sarah asked me if I was interested in participating in a curriculum writing group that was centered around environmental justice. This group, as I would later learn, was a collaboration between Beyond Toxics and a bunch of science and social studies teachers. So we set out to create a curriculum based on the problem of industrial pollutants, specifically in West Eugene, and specifically related to the case study of J.H. Baxter.
Is that when you first found out about J.H. Baxter?
That's right. That was the first time I ever heard about it, was at this curriculum writing retreat we had.
Yeah. And what did you think when you found out what was where you were teaching?
Shock and disbelief. You know, we learned about you, Audrey, and your daughter, and we learned about how people had been negatively impacted. And it just hit me like a ton of bricks. Like, this is, I was a brand new teacher at Kalapuya at that time. And whoa. This is directly affecting my students. And that part, it became really apparent to me that I needed to take this up in earnest.
Aw, I love that. I mean, it's sad. The situation is very sad, especially my daughter and all that. Not that I'm making light of it, but the situation is sad. But it gave you not a purpose, because being a teacher, I feel like, is fulfilling some of that. But being able to help do something about and bring education to what's going on with your students personally, I think is pretty amazing. So, which brings me to when we were talking about you and Metzley being on the show, you had mentioned something about a social and emotional piece of the lesson. What did you mean by that?
Just like learning about any climate change subject, immersing ourselves in environmental justice can be a heavy emotional burden. A lot of those feelings, whatever they might be, anger, frustration, sadness, often come from a place of helplessness. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm just one person. What can I do about it? So it's really important that we balance these lessons for the students with tangible things they can do. And I believe it starts with, you know, what is our community? Who are our people? And for us all to realize that fixing environmental justice and climate issues comes down to how we treat each other. So I think that is something tangible and that my students can, identify with. And that is kind of the building block that we built from. It's also the anecdote to all that big, scary stuff. Mm-hmm. It's anchoring back to how can we help others? What can we do?
Yeah. It's amazing to me that you're able to balance that by being a mom, but also being their teacher, to be able to balance that social and emotional piece of your own. Because it's, I mean, I'm sure you've got, you're connected and feel protective of your kiddos in your classroom. So I know that it's probably difficult for you to juggle that social and emotional piece as a mom. And speaking of which, as a mom, do your kids know what's happening where their mommy teaches? Do they know that mommy goes to school where it's polluted?
Well, my children are 6 and 9, and I sort of adhere to this rule of no disasters before like 4th or 5th grade. Yeah. That said, when they ask about my students' artwork, and we're able to have a discussion about the fact that my students are getting sick from pollution in their neighborhood. And my own children, they're quick to relate that to the industry they see in their own neighborhood, like right across town in Springfield where we live. So they know that, you know, they understand on some level, but I'm careful to not burden them so young.
Yeah. And not make it scary. Like, oh no, he's going to work, you know, like scared for you to go to work. Do you think that this lesson, this environmental justice lesson, is something that you will, like, is it going to be part of your curriculum moving forward? Is there always going to be this piece of environmental justice in your teaching?
Yeah, absolutely. Environmental justice will always be an important part of my curriculum, especially because it's such an important topic that's talked about daily on the news. Mm-hmm. And students need to be able to weave through that information and make their own informed decisions about how they vote, where they live. Also, I think part of the pedagogical mindset and teaching about any environmental issue is that we must first anchor ourselves and our students into things that they care about close to home before we can ask them to care about things that are far away, like the rainforest.
Yeah.
So I've read the research and understood all along that it's something I needed to plan for and make part of my curriculum. I feel that having students research problems that are close to home is really important for informing bigger global scale issues and these nationwide things that we might vote on.
Yeah. And to take that information home too, to their families who might not know what's going on.
Yeah.
Which slides me over here to you, Metzley. It's your turn, girl.
Yay.
So, hey, what grade are you in?
I'm currently a senior, technically super senior, but I'm going strong. And I actually just finished. I graduated early on the last week of the week right before spring break. So thank you so much.
Are you over there thriving? How long have you lived in Bethel?
I actually haven't lived over in the Bethel area for all too long. Me and my family, we moved out here in early 2021 because we had decided that we were financially ready to buy a house. And this was just like a more fit area for us because we were financially ready to buy a house, but we also didn't have very much money. So it was like, let's look for a house that suits us, but is also still within our like price range. Mm-hmm.
And do you have siblings?
Yes. It's me, my mom, I have 2 older brothers, and then I have 2 dogs and 3 cats.
Oh.
Yeah.
I have a dog and 1 cat. And my dog has to go to the vet today. And she doesn't know that. But my dog's getting old, you guys. She's gonna be 13 and she's starting to seem like she's gonna be 13. So
okay, it's okay.
It is okay. She's gonna go to the vet today and we're gonna hopefully get everything's going to be fine, but you know, we're preparing ourselves for, I mean, she's old, she's getting old. So
hopefully she's got some years left in her though.
I hope she does. You know, I'm so morbid that I'm Googling like How long does an English lab live? When do you know when they're not feeling well? How do they act when they're, you know, Googling all the things? Because I'm addicted to Google, I think.
Yeah.
But Metzley, did you know what environmental racism was before your lessons with Kelly? Had you heard that term before?
No. So actually, I hadn't heard the term environmental racism until I actually read the questions that for this podcast, and I saw that you put a little definition of it, and I was like, oh my gosh, I didn't even know that this was a thing. Like, growing up, I could always see and kind of pinpoint that people of color and people of minorities were just not forcefully lived to live in other parts of Eugene, but that it was very much different, and the people who surrounded me were always other people of color or other people of low income, and I didn't get to know even what environmental justice or what environmental racism was until I came to Kalapuya.
Well, I'm glad that you got to know what's going on. It sucks that you're a victim of environmental racism. I was too growing up and didn't realize it, because back in the 80s, early 90s, nobody was talking about environmental racism or environmental justice. And actually, I didn't even know about environmental racism until I started working at Beyond Toxics. And then my light turned on, oh, that's why there was a big slaughterhouse in the middle of my neighborhood when I was growing up.
Right.
That's why that was just placed there in the middle of the neighborhood, because you're down there, down the hill where all the poor people live, where all the people of color live. Let's put this giant thing right down here in the middle of this neighborhood. And it probably was there, and then they built houses around it, because that's what they do, right?
Yeah.
So was Kelly's class the first place that you learned about J.H. Baxter? Had you seen it or noticed it?
I remember the months leading up into me and my family moving to the Bethel area. I would very often drive by J.H. Baxter, and I would always be like, I wonder what that is. And then I started here at Kalapuya in October of 2022. And my first teacher was Kay Ferg, and she taught me about J.H. Baxter, and we read about it, and I was like, oh, is this that place that I was when I first moved here? And I was like, it is. I was like, that's so crazy. And it was just very aggravating to learn about that they were held accountable for so long, but they didn't shut down for over 30 years because of some reason. I don't know.
Yeah, it's insane that they were able to sit there and do that for decades because nobody was looking. Yeah. Now we're looking. Now everybody's looking. We're like,
I was on you.
Yeah, and the kids know about it now. So look out, J.H. Baxter.
I know, right?
Now the kids know about it. I never really noticed those smokestacks and different things when I lived out there, because that's just where we lived. You know, I saw them. Yes. Did I know what was coming out of them? No. Did I really care that much? Not really, because I didn't know it was hurting me. I'm glad that you know now what's going on with your neighborhood and how it's impacting you and your students. I mean, you and your classmates. I'm going to stop for just a second, not for you, Crystal, but because I think it's so cute that you call her K-Ferg. I just caught that. I mean, I heard you say it earlier and I was like, K-Ferg. And then I said, oh, she's talking about Kelly.
K-Ferg, yeah.
Kelly's last name is Ferguson. Kelly Ferguson. So these kiddos are calling her K-Ferg. How fun is that?
I don't know where that started, honestly. I think one time I wrote K-Ferg on the board. It was an example of somebody who's like, hey, first letter of your first name, and then four of your last. And then it just stuck from that day on.
I think it's cool.
Yeah.
So, Nestle, you did a really awesome piece of art for the art walk. Could you tell me a little bit about what the Art Walk is and what made you choose the data photo that you chose for your artwork?
So the first Friday Art Walks that we, or I guess we only did it one time, but what it was, I think it's something that's held by Lane's like Council Arts program or something like that. I'm not super sure, is it?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. And I remember the first one that we did, it was held at Sparks on 7th, and it was mainly just like us getting the opportunity to share the work that we did and to have our voices and our like emotions heard. Because for me, the graph that I chose was about like the groundwater plume that is being like distributed into our like drinking water and the water that we use here in West Eugene. So I had this, the first image was a data graph of the groundwater plume contamination 2001. And then I had another photo from the reduction of the groundwater plume contamination from 2015. And I took both of those and I placed them like upside down. I was sure to add like all of the little details that was in the graph that I saw, but I made them my own because after learning about like yours and Zion's story, and after like pinpointing like things and sicknesses and hearing more stories from other people who go to school here, it's like okay, so we're getting sick and like we're becoming diseased people. So I also took that into inspiration, like all the little like weird things that are on it are like to represent disease and also just like myself and the way that I view what's happening. And then I used very like light, bright colors because that's just me. And I also wanted to show that like in the midst of all the darkness that there's still light and like that we will emerge from what is.
Oh my God, that's beautiful. And just looking at your art piece, you can't hear the emotions that you put into that. I was blown away by all of your artwork. And everybody out there that's listening, you can take a look at the kids' artwork on beyondtoxics.org. And you can find them there at the Youth Corner. And you can see some artwork from some of Metzli's classmates and the one that she described there as well. What the kids did is they took photos and data photos from information that was gathered about J.H. Baxter over the years. And it's really powerful imagery of how they feel and J.H. Baxter has impacted their lives. And it's really, really extraordinary to see and to witness. So go over there and look at their stuff, beyondtoxics.org, the Youth Corner.
And a little bit of background to that is just the kind of one of the culminating projects that was always at the end of the what we called the Baxter unit, the environmental justice unit in my classes. Okay, what are we going to do about this? And so I would allow the students to kind of investigate how they understood that they wanted to get the word out to their community. Almost every single one of them came into my class not knowing about it. And even as terrifying as it was, when I asked them, would you rather not know? They say no. Mm-hmm. We would rather know. And we want other people to know. Okay, so how are we going to do that? So some of them chose to write letters to city council. Some of them chose to make flyers that they would give out in the community. Some of them had ideas about how to contribute to community events to get the word out. So anyway, fast forward like a year, and we have this week here at Kalapuya called Electives Week, and the teachers hosted different electives for the students. And I just thought, let's take a whole week on that one thing. That what can we do about it? So that's what the students were tasked with for that week. And that's where Metzli's artwork came out of, is we're going to get the word out through art, and the data will be hidden in the art somewhere. So people will be drawn into the art because we just connect more with artwork than we do a graph or mm-hmm. a bar chart. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. We connect with it. But then when you realize what the science or the data that's that the artwork is based on, it gives the art more meaning and it gives the science and the message more meaning when we first had that emotional connection to the artwork. So that was the intention that Metzli took and ran with it, and it turned out amazing, like better than I could have ever imagined. Like they were just, it blew me away.
Yeah, me too. Me too, especially the subject matter blew me away because it's heavy. Yeah. It's a burden. And to be able to take back some of that power that was stolen from you through artwork is powerful. So thank you for pouring your little heart into that, because it turned out beautifully. And I'm going to tell you right now, we get raving reviews all the time from you kids' work. Everybody's like, that's so powerful. It's so impactful. They did such a great job. So just know that you're getting kudos that you don't even know about, because everybody's seen. Yeah, it's doing what it's doing what you wanted it to do.
Job well done.
Yeah, it's doing it. So I'm gonna get a little bit personal. We're gonna talk about sickness. You know my story. Mm-hmm. And you know, luckily my girl came out of it. She persevered. She's in college now. She's going to OSU. She's rocking it. But everybody doesn't have that. Everybody doesn't get that. And everybody has health issues out there. Mm-hmm. Do you feel comfortable telling me any kind of issues that you might have?
Before I moved to this area, I was a very like healthy child. I never had like any diagnosis, and I would only ever go to the doctor if I was doing like a checkup or if I had gotten like just like randomly sick from the flu or needed to go like ER or something. But after learning about J.H. Baxter and after hearing your story and Zion's story and hearing just like more and more from the students that live in my community and that go to my school, I like started to think about it, and I was like thinking for a while, trying to pinpoint like my story and like the process of me moving here and when it happened and what happened between. And I like finally came to the conclusion like just a couple months ago that I'm pretty sure within the first 5 months of me and my family moving to the Bethel area that I was diagnosed with asthma because of that. And also the asthma rates in Bethel are like almost 2 times higher than the rates in 4J, which is crazy because there's only one high school and so many elementary schools, when it's like, shouldn't it be the other way around? Because you guys have more students.
Yeah. And I've heard a lot about asthma. I've heard a lot about cancer. You know, it's
hives. I hear about hives from my students all the time.
Hives, yeah. Yeah. Metzli, how do you tell your family about this? Have you told them about it? And what's making them, what do they feel like?
I remember the first day that Kelly introduced J.H. Baxter to us, and I was learning about it. I was like, just like utterly shocked and like angry and confused. And I knew that immediately I had to go tell like the people that I loved. So I remember the first day I like went back home and I was like, Mom, you're not going to believe this, but there's this place who is like making people sick because of the toxins that they're emitting from where they work. And she wasn't surprised, because mm-hmm. I think when you become older, you become like more susceptible to those things. But even if you want to make a change, you just feel like that you can't because you become like too old, or like, oh, like now I'm not like my voice doesn't matter or something. But she was still like very shocked, and I can still see the anger in her.
Yeah, because we're mad. Making our kids sick. We're pissed off about it.
Mm-hmm.
Really mad about it. And so she might not even let you know how mad she is, but it's maddening, because you put your kids at home and you're imagining that the kids are fine, and then they go to school. They're supposed to be safe at school. They're supposed to be safe at home. You should be allowed to play in the sprinkler at your house. You should be allowed to play in the dirt if you want to, because you're a little kid, or you just want to make you just want to be in the dirt. You want to dig your garden or whatever. You should be allowed to do that. It makes me mad beyond measure about what's going on in West Eugene. And it makes me mad for the future kids too. Makes me mad for your kids. So I'm just going to get down from my soapbox on that for just a minute. But I know that I can hear your anger, and I appreciate you being on the show. And what made you say yes to me?
I said that I was having the hardest game of tug of war with myself, like when Kelly asked me to do this. So it's been like about a month or two that I knew about the podcast and that Kelly wanted me to like be on this. And I feel like my story isn't as important as other people's, or is that like, since I didn't get like sick, that my story wasn't as valid, that I haven't lived here for long enough to talk about what's going on in the area. But then I realized, I was like, I just need to say yes, because I want to make, first of all, my younger self proud, because as a child, I like grew up seeing all of these things. And I've always, like, as a minority, you just feel like that you're never going to have the chance to be able to use your voice or like make a change in the world. So it was like, I need to do this for my younger self and for my people, because I want them to be proud of me and the things that I do. And I also want this whole community to know that I stand with them and I believe them. Even if I am only one person as a minority, I want to inspire the future generations to take a stand for not only the environment, but what they believe, that their race, sexual orientation, class, gender, and their history matters.
She took my breath away. That's exactly what I wanted. I wanted you to share my platform with me to elevate your voice, to let people know that you're not going to just sit there and take it.
No.
I am proud of you. I'm very proud of you, because this is hard. It's a hard subject. You're getting into emotions. You're getting into feelings. And you're on the spot. I'm asking you a bunch of questions. So it's intimidating, and you didn't allow that. And that's what's going to get you through all this, is knowing that you cannot be intimidated and you cannot be shut down. That's what's going to get you through it. That's what's going to get you through it, your family through it, your classmates through it. Your voice is powerful. And it doesn't matter that you didn't get as sick as everybody else. You're sick. You have a diagnosis. You got sick from living in West Eugene. And I'm so proud of you for talking about it, because it's hard.
Thank you for saying that you're proud of me. I appreciate that.
I am, girl. I'm really proud of you, because this is hard stuff.
Yes.
Before the podcast even happened, I always get nervous. I'm the one that's asking the questions. And before it even happens, I'm thinking all day, like, did I ask the right question? Am I going to ask the right things? Am I going to forget what I said? Are they going to feel comfortable? Am I going to be all right? Is my microphone going to work? You know, all those things happen. So I just appreciate you very much. And I want to ask you, like, what would you tell another teenager who doesn't live in West Eugene about your neighborhood?
So I've actually shared this information with, like, I think probably like well over like 20 to 30 people that I know that aren't located in the West Eugene area, because I used to actually live within like the 4J school limits. So I went to the 4J for a while. And after learning about all of this, I was like, this isn't fair that like we're just being like prejudiced against because we don't have as much money to support ourselves, or that we had different upbringings, so that makes it so that we can't live in the same places as other students. And usually when I share this information with like my friends or people who I want to inform, like my family, I tell them that as communities who have experienced emotional or environmental racism by industrial sites, that it is hard to be heard or even like recognized, that we are getting sick just because of the air that we breathe and the places that we hang out. I tell them about personal experiences and shared stories from people who have been greatly affected, like you and your daughter. I tell them statistics that the Bethel neighborhood is a part of an industrial corridor that is made up of the 35 of the 36 manufacturing companies within Eugene city limits. Yeah. And I also tell them that like in 2020 alone, an estimated of 700,000 pounds of toxic chemicals were released in West Eugene. in 2020 alone, and this place was open for like over 30 years, right?
Yeah, opened in the 40s.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
You tell them about me? Thank you. Thank you very much, because that's my whole reason. You're my reason. Your classmates are my reason for this. Everything else aside, it's for the kids. That's why I started this whole thing, is for the kids. So I just keep on saying I'm proud of you, and telling people about it is where it starts. Yes. And like I said at the start, it starts with the youth. We're just here to steward your planet. So
this is why we do the work, Audrey.
This is why we do the work.
And so, as Miss Teacher, a little bit of Mama Bear comes out in me too. Like, I feel really protective, and before doing this podcast, I just feel like, on behalf of Metzli, I kind of started this whole thing, and just, I was worried. I wanted this to be a positive experience for her. And just hearing her talk and her bravery, it just blows my mind. And I like couldn't be more proud. I'm so proud of all of these students' bravery on a daily basis. Metzli, you just have this such a beautiful perspective on life. And I'm so glad that it's your voice that everyone's hearing.
Thank you guys so much for this opportunity. I don't even know how grateful I am for this.
Well, heck yeah. You could be back anytime you want. No problem. So, ladies, this is a question for both of you. We've had a conversation with Kelly, had a conversation with Metzli, a little bit thrown in here, there, and there. But this is a question for both of you guys. Where would you like to see the Bethel School District in the next few years? Let's say the next 5 years. You'll be gone from Kalapuya. Kelly, you'll still be there. What do you guys want to see?
Well, I think I was speaking to that a little bit before when I was talking about the city and the rest of Eugene stepping up for this community. And that means doing more for our youth, doing more for community. You know, really, unless you're someone who has perhaps a strong church community in this area or sports team, or there's just really isn't much here. And I really want to see the city and the people of Eugene proper step up for our youth. So to me, that would look like more community centers, maybe, you know, more youth programs, more funds funneled into programs that are located here,
mm-hmm.
right? That are accessible. I realize that there are programs in downtown Eugene, but the reality is that people here don't know about it, and B, like, how do we get them there?
Yeah. There's no accessibility. There needs to be some place that you can just walk up the street with a group of friends and go to a youth center, or go to a program that buses you out to the snow for the day, or, you know, something fun for kids. There's nothing in West Eugene, and that's not fair. So thank you for saying that, Kelly. What about you, Metzli?
I think my views for what I hope Bethel to be within the next like 5 to 10 years, it's very similar to Kayferg. She was talking about how here in West Eugene, we don't have very many like community places or things where we can just like show up and feel welcomed. Mm-hmm. And from my experience, all in like the east side of Eugene, there's like kids sports and like these after school programs that you can go to, so that you can like for me, when I was younger, I used to go to after school programs because my mother would work late and I wouldn't be able to go home like by myself. And there's like nothing like that here. So kids are very often just left to go fend for themselves when they're not even old enough to. And I really hope that we can just like keep doing what we're doing, holding more people accountable and recognizing what's going on through learning, through artwork. And like, I really hope that Kalapuya gives many more students the option and the opportunity to use their voice and be heard.
Yeah. Awesome. This has been a really great conversation. I'm like, it's probably going to be my favorite just because it's my purpose. Yeah. You're my purpose. So thank you for being on my show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yes, Kelly and Metzley, thank you both for being here with me today. Your voices are the voices of the future, and I feel blessed to have been able to talk to both of you today about West Eugene, about your lives, about how it feels to live out there, teach out there, who you're talking to about it. I think it's really awesome. So again, I am Arjorie. Thank you for listening to Why We Do the Work. I'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.